Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with me. Of course, Thursday nights at 6, Saturday mornings at 9, and always on WGCLradio.com. We're talking retirement readiness today. We're going to be talking about getting ready to get ready. And when it comes to retirement, you can't get ready too soon. But it's never too late to get started. And we're going to give folks a lot of information throughout the show on this idea of just getting ready to get ready when it comes to retirement. We'll throw a little college planning in as well. It's going to be a good show today. We'll be joined later on in the program as we get into considerations to think about that maybe you haven't considered. Brian Bell, he's going to call in and talk a little bit about health insurance, a big one for people that are heading into retirement. You know, all week long, we've heard nothing in the news except for China. We've heard a lot. We heard Greece last week. Now it's all about China. You know, Rodney Johnson was our guest last week, the senior editor of Economy and Markets, and he put out a neat piece this week, so I thought I might share it with you. He's talked about, you know, are you feeling the panic in the air? Stock market officials called on one of their own to turn the tide. And what he's saying here is that they basically gave him a pocket full of cash and a directive, go buy stocks until they trade higher. Now, he dutifully did his duty, stepped onto the floor, and began purchasing blocks of big blue chip companies at above market prices. Market participants quickly fell in line, buying up shares and pushing up prices. This is not a recap of events in China. This is exactly what happened in the United States in early 1929. As the losses mounted, the board of the New York Stock Exchange sent their VP, Richard Whitney, down on the floor to buy blocks of well-known companies. The strategy actually stopped the panic of 1907, so they hoped it would work again, and it did for a while. Within 2 weeks, though, the market would suffer devastating routs in what became known as Black Tuesday. The selling would continue on and off for more than 2 years until the Dow got all the way down 80%. It reached the bottom in 1932. So the Chinese seem to be taking a page from this playbook, but with a little bit of twist that may be even riskier. As the Chinese basically property market started to slow in 2014, investors and speculators turned their attention from condos to stocks, and over the course of a year, they pushed China's main stock index up more than 150%. Now, there were a lot of stories of small-time investors jumping into the market to make a buck. Many of them took out loans to purchase shares, but unfortunately, the loans, the losses have been softened a bit because the government has recently changed regulations to keep margin loans outstanding, even though share of prices have come down. And since investors haven't had to meet margin calls by putting up more cash or collateral or selling their shares at losses, the selling has been orderly so far. Now, the market's down about 30% from its high, so it ran up 150, down 30, still not bad math. But, you know, the Chinese didn't stop there. In addition to cutting interest rates and lowering reserve requirements, the government also pumped money directly into brokerage firms for the express purpose of making even more loans. At the same time, just as the stock exchange did back in the 20s with Richard Whitney, China sent their government down to buy shares of large companies too. And that was after the market had plummeted about 30%. Now, these efforts actually sent the market up over there about 2.5%, but then it turned over again. Clearly, China is drawing its straws and is a little bit desperate here. Almost every single day, a new reg comes out from the Chinese government. The government needs the markets to hold because it can't afford to see its emerging consumer class. They've been trying to move away from this export economy into a consumer-driven economy like the big boys, us and Japan. But they can't see that these folks get hit with huge losses. If they lose the equity, their value and their equity, then they still owe these loans. Untold number of people could be completely wiped out. So that does no good for a consumer-driven economy. So with slowing exports and falling construction, the Chinese have staked much of their future on domestic consumer spending. So if mom-and-pop investors carry margin debt for stocks that have plummeted in value, they won't be able to buy more stuff and drive up the economy. That's how it works. The Chinese have actually taken this to an entirely different level. Not only has the government funneled money to brokerage firms, they had specifically to lend to investors so they can buy more stock, but they've also loosened the rules on what types of assets can be pledged as collateral. Now the Chinese can even pledge their own homes when they want to borrow money to make investments. So basically, any market losses could lead to selling of shares, then followed by liquidation of real estate. In other words, both stocks and real estate could tank. So if only the economic experiments would stop there, that would be good. But the Chinese government's also buying up thousands of empty homes to sell to the nation's poorest households. But at last check, just so you know, China held like $3.8 trillion or something like that in foreign reserve currency. The country is well capitalized, so stock market sell-off like this or sell-off in real estate won't send the nation to bankruptcy or default or anything like that. But China is the 800-pound gorilla over in the Pacific Rim. So when they feel pain, all of its smaller neighbors do too. So Japan, South Korea, Australia. I mean, Australia has somewhat of a property bubble too. They all share in the discomfort. So, you know, in the process of finding a bottom in the capital markets over there and a potential retrenchment in property values, I would rethink before putting any money in that region. And just today, the U.S. stock markets actually went up, according to Reuters, that because of some relief efforts that halted the rout of Chinese stocks, which then lifted stocks around the world. Shares of Apple were the only ones that kind of bucked the market trend, logging its fifth losing day in a row, and that's not happened in a long time. And, of course, they're worried that consumers over in China will have less money to buy up iPhones. But Wall Street has fallen in previous markets as turmoil in China and commodity prices have gone down, the Greek debt crisis, a major outage on the New York Stock Exchange. They all spooked investors. But here's what happened. China's securities regulator, in its most dramatic step yet, according to this article, basically went in and said, hey, if you're a large stakeholder in a company, you just can't sell your stock. So if you own more than 5% of a company, you can't sell your stock for the next 6 months. So with that news, all the markets went up. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about getting ready to get ready, as retirement readiness is the new buzzword around. And then later on, we'll be doing questions of the week. I got a great show lined up here, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I get people in my office all of the time trying to get ready for retirement. We call it retirement readiness, getting ready to get ready. And, you know, it can be stressful. And many people come in and they always want to know kind of how they rate next to other people, when they can retire. You know, have they started too late? And I'll tell you, it's never too late to start, certainly never too early to start as well. But time does go by quick. You know, when I started doing this radio program, my son was a toddler. And for those of you that have been listening to me for the last 12 years, you know, occasionally he would call in on Father's Day and have that sweet little voice wishing me a happy Father's Day. Well, now he's not that sweet anymore. He's going to high school next year, and, you know, it's kind of tough being the father of a 14-year-old that knows everything. But all of you guys out there and gals that know what I'm talking about, you have kids as well. But, you know, as you talk about retirement readiness, there's really two camps, you know, the youngers and the olders, and the kind of the in-betweeners like me. You know, if you're younger, it's really difficult to hone in on a set number. It's really, really difficult. If you're in your 30s, your life is going to be much different when you're 60 than it is when you're 30. Much, much different. So you just have to use some guidelines, like how much money to save. Well, it's good to save in this world about 15% of your gross pay. That's number one. That's a good thing. Obviously, you know, staying out of debt, not having a lot of consumer debt, that's a good thing. If you have a mortgage, make sure that your mortgage will be paid off on these trigger events. It could be when your kids go to college. That's been a big one of mine lately. Hey, force yourself to make payments. We are excellent payment makers, most of us in America, and terrible savers. So make savings part of your payment plan. If paying off your home in 15 years is what you need to do so that you free up the cash flow to send your kid to school, college, then maybe that's what you should do. Now, when you're older, it's a lot easier to hone in on the number. You know, if you're 5 years out, you know what you're making, you know what you're spending, your kids are probably raised, you start working on just honing in on those numbers. What do we need to do to get the house paid off if it's not already? What kind of disposable income do we want in retirement? What kind of guaranteed income sources do we have? You can start honing in on these numbers, really tightening them up. And that's really the retirement readiness. Now, folks that are thinking, man, I'm in my mid-50s, I haven't really saved that much, my kids are finally out of the home, we're making good money, this is the time for you to make hay. You know, you're like most Americans. Most Americans get up, when they're you know, young, and they go to get a job, and they eventually get married, and they start to have kids, and then they start spending. You know, you're never more broke than the day after you have your first kid, and certainly even more broke the day after you have your second kid. But then as they get older, they each out of house and home, they leave on all the lights, they're in activities, they have cars, car insurance, it just costs a lot. So as they move past their college years, you have a lot of disposable income. I see people, two-income households, get to the point where they can save 50% of their household income and catch up. I mean, that's the time to really catch up. But you need to sit down and calculate this stuff. You got to get rid of these debts. You got to get down to the bottom and get your numbers. Now that we've talked about our new book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, educate yourself. Learn what you need to do. Learn the lingo. Learn the topics, you know, and then start to really get ready. A lot of things that folks worry about, they shouldn't, and some things they don't even know they should be worrying about. So in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Brian Bill. He's going to be calling in and talking about some considerations that maybe you haven't thought about. You know, some will say, you know, some people, and I actually met with someone even today who just retired, and he told me, he said, you know, if I knew it was going to be this difficult to retire, I probably wouldn't have retired. And I see that all the time. People say, I haven't retired because it's too overwhelming to think about. You know, all the insurances, the rollovers, the pension selections. And then the fact that you're not getting a paycheck anymore, it can be a little stressful. The gentleman that I met with today, he's only been retired for a few months, and he was telling me how I bought this motorhome, but now I'm going to get rid of it. And I said, why? He said, well, I'm not getting a paycheck anymore, and I'm a nervous wreck about it. So, and he had no reason to be nervous, but he was. So, you know, things that you should start to get your mind ready for, get your pocketbook ready for, those are the kind of things that really help when you're talking retirement readiness. So as we take a break and we come back, we're going to be talking about some of these things that you should be thinking about that you may not even know about. And we're going to start with health insurance because that's a biggie. I mean, especially people that retire prior to age 65, it's a biggie. So let's take a break. We'll come back. Brian Bell will be joining us to talk a little bit about health insurance. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. We're talking retirement readiness, getting ready to get ready, and you know some of the considerations you have to think about, but maybe you really haven't, and maybe you have. And one of the big ones is just getting ready to pay for things that maybe you're not used to paying for, and a big one is health insurance. And Brian Bell now joins me on the phone, and Brian is an insurance specialist. He's my go-to guy on issues when it comes to health insurance. And Brian, I don't know if you're calling from the 16th tee or not, like you promised, but I appreciate you taking a few minutes to give us a call.
Well, David, you know, you've seen me play before, so I'm actually relegated to the putt-putt now. And if you hear me get upset, it means I hit the windmill.
There you go, my man. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. Brian, we're going to talk first about the people that are not quite Medicare age. You know, a lot of folks are either forced into early retirement or choose to take early retirement. Now, if they're married and they have a spouse that works someplace where they can get picked up on their group plan, great, that's perfect. But Brian, not many people are that fortunate, and they need to bridge that gap between, let's say, 63 and 65. Walk us through some of those options and what a person could expect to pay if that's them.
Well, unfortunately today, David, there aren't as many options as there were in the past, as you know. And so most of the people are going to be looking at options that are going to involve the individual major medical market or healthcare.gov. And it's all going to be dependent upon pretty much their age. But, for instance, we just had a guy that we were working with, one of your clients, and he is 63, 2 years away from Medicare. He bought a policy for himself, and it was a policy that was kind of what I would call, you know, the basic policy, the bronze plan, and he's paying about $750 a month for that coverage.
So you're talking about 2 years of that, and then you go on Medicare after that. And I guess, Brian, just because he has health insurance, $700 a month, that's not going to cover everything. He's still going to have other out-of-pocket expense.
He is, and that's one of the things that you need to be you know, planning for is those out-of-pocket expenses. So, again, it's one of those things when we talk about being ready, you know, budget and plan ahead. In his particular instance, he's going to have about $6,300 of out-of-pocket exposure that, you know, he could pull that out of a health savings account if he had set one of those up and funded it, which he did, so he's fortunate. But, you know, like you said, there are a lot of out-of-pocket expenses, but there are also coverages that you can purchase to cover a lot of those. So if you haven't establish a health savings account, look at some of the supplemental policies that will cover a lot of those out-of-pocket expenses that you might have.
And if you're in this boat, folks, and you want a little help, just email me at cfci.us, and I'll put you in touch with Brian, and he'll help you out. Brian, let's talk about the other option, going to healthcare.gov. You can do that and, in some cases, receive a subsidy. Now, I know right now it is income tested. It's not asset tested. And as you and I both know, we have kind of, I guess, pulled the wool over the pony's eyes on this in a few situations and have gotten people some subsidies that, you know, really had the money to pay for it.
That's true. And it's, you know, completely within the spirit of the code that's out there right now, the regulations. So it's not something that's unethical or illegal. You know, you can definitely do it. But one thing that I have seen recently is that there have been a lot of inquiries about this from the IRS. And so you need to do it right. And like most things in life, when the government's involved, you need to follow the spirit of the code. But like you said, there are opportunities to qualify for subsidies or other types of special need programs that you need to investigate and take advantage of.
You have to lower your reportable income. And there are ways to do that. Again, if you want a little help with this, it's complex, but it's also doable. You can email me at cfci.us, and we'll help you out. Now, Brian, the other thing is when people get to Medicare age, and Medicare age is still 65, regardless of your full retirement age for Social Security, there's some rules they need to follow. For instance, whenever they get to age 65, there's a couple of different parts. Walk us through the qualification and then also what they need to sign up for and then how much does it cost?
Well, basically, you know, everyone that's paid into the Social Security system is going to qualify for Part A, which is the hospitalization plan. Part B, you will pay for. It will be, again, income tested, but most people, for most folks, they're going to pay about $105 a month. It'll be deducted from their Social Security check, and that will cover their doctor office visits or outpatient types of services. What Medicare doesn't pay is typically covered by a Medicare supplement policy. And then, as you know, the big one is prescription drugs. And so a lot of people will purchase prescription drug plans that will help them through that those expenses. Which can be substantial, as you know, and that's really the four pieces of Medicare. Now, one of the things that you have is a lot of different options with regard to the type of coverage that you select, and so, again, you have to pick the one that's, you know, right for you and fits your financial situation.
Now, what do you see typical for a person spending on a supplement and a drug plan? I mean, they're spending the $105 a month, and if they're on, Social Security's coming directly out of that, but otherwise they pay it themselves for Part B. When it comes to a supplement and a drug plan, what can people expect to pay?
I'd say when they're 65 years old and enrolling initially in a Medicare supplement, they're going to be looking at probably in the 140 to 160 range.
Mm-hmm.
That will go up over time. There's no doubt about it. You know, medical costs go up, and so the insurance premiums are commensurate with that increase. With regard to a prescription drug plan, I think they're very affordable. You know, you can find one from $16 to $52, and it'll probably meet the majority of your needs.
So if you're married, folks, that's about $105 for Part B, $140 for supplements, another $50 on top of that for your drug plan. So it's almost $300 a person. If you're married, that's about $600 a month that they can plan. And that doesn't cover everything, but it does cover a lot of stuff. So there's still, if you are on a lot of prescriptions, I know we're not going to get into the details of this. You'll get into some donut holes and some copays and things like that. So there's additional expense. And there's been recent studies come out in kind of sharing how much people should expect to pay for health-related expenses in their retirement years, and it's pretty astounding. So as we talk about retirement readiness, Brian, I think we have to focus on health care because it is a major expense for people. And as you get older, unfortunately, folks, you do tend to go to the doctor more often. You tend to be on more medications, so you cannot ignore it. Brian, thank you so much. Get back to the tee box and hit them straight.
All right. Thanks, David.
I'll talk to you next week, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about considerations that you need to think about. Number one would be like taxes, and we have inflation considerations. And then later on in that segment, if we have time, we'll kick it to the next one. If we don't, debt, you know, mortgages. And I want to really start getting your mind to change, your mindset to change on becoming, you know, you focused so much on net worth, not enough on net income. And that's really what it's about. It's about cash flow in retirement. And that's why you have to start getting ready to get ready, because it's a different mindset as you approach retirement. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We just did a Social Security program at the Monroe County Library. Hope folks enjoyed it that came. What was cool, and maybe not so cool, was that everyone in attendance, and we had about 20 there, 2025 at this session. We do it again next Thursday. So if you'd like to attend, you're more than welcome to come 1:30 next Thursday and just email us at cfci.us so we know you're coming. But it really is open to the public. But no one in that entire group listens to this program at all. As many had never even heard of the program. So hopefully we have a lot of new listeners after we set through the Social Security educational program at the Monroe County Library. And again, we're doing it again next week. So if you'd like to come, again, cfci.us. And that's certainly something that people need to know about as you get ready for retirement. You need to know your options. You need to be pre-planning and be ready. Don't walk in to the Social Security office, you know, the week you retire and make a decision that could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars over your lifetime by making the wrong choice. You know, one thing that we really need to focus on is inflation. And when you talk about considerations to think about in retirement readiness, don't think just because you can replace all of your disposable income today after, you know, you left your job that you will be able to in 10 or 20 years. If you have $50,000 of income need today, in 10 years at 3% inflation, you need $67,000. And in 20 years, $90,000 to buy the same stuff $50,000 does today. Well, how do you do that? I mean, if you want to preserve your money, you shouldn't pull out more than 4 or 5% of the account value each year. So you need about $1.8 million to spend off $90,000 a year. But if you're starting out of the gate at 50 and you look forward and think, huh, in 10 years, I'm still going to have $50,000 a year. And in 20 years, still $50,000 a year. You're going to have some pain and suffering along the way, because the one, we don't use the word guaranteed on this show very often, but I can guarantee you one thing, that some things are going to cost more 10 years from now than they do today. And I would say maybe most things are going to cost more. Just ask someone that's been in retirement for 10 years, 15, 20 years, and ask them, and they'll tell you. So you have to prepare for inflation. Now, what's the reality of this? Depending on the age that you start retirement, if you started retirement at 68, 69, 70, like a lot of people are working a little bit longer, then, you know, you're a little more advanced, and you're going to have a stage of life where you're going to be go-going. And you've heard me say this, I haven't said it for a while, but you're going to have these go-go years. You're going to be traveling. You're going to be visiting grandchildren. You're going to be following them on baseball tournaments. You're going to be spending a lot of money, and that's your go-go years. But then you'll get into a period of life where you don't do as much. You don't feel like it, and you're in your slow-go years. You're still out doing things, just not a lot, not spending a lot of money. Then maybe in your advanced years, you're in your no-go years, where you really don't do much at all, and you don't spend a lot of money. And as long as you have your health insurance taken care of for later in life stuff like long-term care, it's unlikely you're going to spend much at all. So when you talk about, do I really need, when I'm 90 years old, an inflation-adjusted income that I needed when I was 65? Probably not. So when the reality of that sets in, I think it makes those numbers more palatable. It makes them more real to you. So again, all of the financial planning software out there, any calculator that you do online, never takes that into consideration, never takes the lifestyle into consideration, never takes the, you know, the idea that you're going to spend a little bit less when you're 90 on going to the movies than you do when you're 65. Now, the other thing, let's talk a little bit about debt. Some folks will say, well, my mortgage is only 3%. And I say, who cares? When you get into retirement, folks, it's more about cash flow than anything else. It's more about your ins and your outs. If you have a $1,500 mortgage payment, even if your interest rate's only 3%, and that's $18,000 a year that's going out. It takes $360,000 at 5% to produce $18,000 a year. It's more about cash flow than interest rates and rates of return in retirement. You got to change your mindset. You know, quit thinking about things like you're an accumulator. You're now in the distribution mode. So when you say, I'm not paying off my house because the interest rate's only 3, you're thinking like someone that's younger. You're not getting it. You need to really think about this and be retirement ready. Have your house paid off in retirement. I think that's the number one goal you should have. You should save more, put it against debt, or do both, balance it out. That'll all come together at the same time. So when you think about, okay, I'm 10 years out or 15 years out, should I put more in my 401k or should I put more on my house? Balance it out. Make those two things come together right at the same time. But it's very, very important, I believe, to have as little outflows, mandatory outflows. Make them discretionary outflows. Make it your choice, not someone else's choice, as you get retirement ready. And you cannot forget taxes. That's a big one. Man, did I have a discussion this week with a nervous Nelly. He had put together a spreadsheet. He's an engineer type. It was awesome. He had all of his assets. He had his expected income. It was all inflated out. And he did not take into consideration go-go, slow-go, no-go years, but we adjusted for that. But he said, am I missing anything? And I said, yeah, unfortunately, you're missing taxes. We're going to have to take taxes because all of this money that's coming to you is from retirement accounts for the most part in interest and dividends. We're going to have to consider taxes. So when we put the 20 and the 25% tax rates in, it just devastated his spreadsheet. It devastated his plan. So again, he's just a few years away from retirement. And then we were able to make a few other adjustments and take the order of distributions differently, make some adjustments on inflation considerations, and go to the go-go, slow-go, no-go plan. And it ended up that, hey, he's probably going to be okay. He might have to work a little bit longer. Because at the end of the day, it boils down to a few moving parts. You know, you either save more, you take less, you earn more on your investments, or you work longer. Pretty simple math, really. And then finally, as we talk about debt, credit card debt, don't have it. If you have it, you don't have an income problem, you have a spending problem, do not have credit card debt in retirement. Sure, use the credit card to buy things, get your points, whatever, but pay that stinker off at the end of every single month. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about some younger people because, again, throughout my week, I had two folks in this week, both in their 40s, who we're really struggling with the fact, do I sacrifice putting money into my retirement accounts to put more into the college accounts, or should I not worry about the college accounts and, you know, do this or do that? I mean, so there's a balancing act there. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, it is a real balancing act for a lot of, you know, younger families. They're making decent money. They're trying to save for retirement. The kids are at college is looming and just puts a lot of stress on them. And they always ask the question, you know, what do I need to do? Do I need to put more in the college plan and neglect my retirement account? Do I put more in my retirement account and worry about the college stuff later? But, you know, unlike college, it can be funded with loans and scholarships, grants. Retirement needs to be pre-funded. So almost all the money that retirees need have to be accumulated before they end the career. There are no grants. There are no scholarships for retirement. So don't underestimate cash flow when it comes to education. Your kids, you don't need all the money. You do not need all the money set aside for their education. And there's a lot of factors that go into this. What if they don't go? What if they drop out? You know, there's a lot of things that happen that you end up locked with this great big 529 plan that is going to be taxed and penalized and possibly recapture of Indiana tax credits if you don't use it. Now, you can always keep it and transfer it to somebody else and all that stuff. But you don't want to put too much in a college savings account. You want to do both. So what I tell people is, listen, at the end of the day, you know, you can save a good amount. Let's say 50% for education. Let's worry about, I think we can cash flow maybe another 20 or 30% of it. And then if we need to take out some loans, we can. But again, retirement has to be pre-funded. So continue to put that money away into the retirement account. And at the end of the day, what happens if you don't have enough in the retirement account? You work an extra year, you know, but college comes at a defined time. So it is a balancing act. I understand it. You don't need to sacrifice one for the other, because if you sacrifice one over the other, a lot of unintended consequences can happen. I mean, parents won't accumulate enough money for college. They have no other choice but then to tap into their retirement accounts. And then if they don't have enough in their retirement accounts, then guess what? They might become a burden on that child. Now, right now, my son is 14. I would love to be a burden on him when he's older. It's coming, son. It's coming. Your day's coming. Hey, let's talk about a couple other quick things before time gets away from me. As we talk about retirement readiness, I mean, I think there's a few key things you need to keep your eyes on. One is, and there's really three main keys. One is know your number. You know, as you've seen the commercials, people carrying around this number, and we are focusing more on net income and not net worth when it comes to retirement readiness, but you do need to know your number. Now, there's two key factors that you need to consider before estimating that number. Number one, what is likely going to be your income in the final years before you retire? Second, how much of that do you want to replace? Now, if you're close to retirement, I mentioned this earlier in the show, you're going to have a really easy time estimating your pre-retirement income. I'm retiring in 3 years. This is what I'm making. I can figure it out. It's more difficult if you're, you know, 20 or 30 years away from retirement. So you have to do some ballparking, you know, inflate it out 3% a year, 5% a year, whatever you want to do, but come up with a number. And I would be more aggressive with the inflation, because if you're 30, you're going to make a heck of a lot of money when you're more money when you're 50 than you're 30, I hope. And that you need to be aggressive with those numbers, but come up with your number. That's very, very important. Second thing is know the rule of 25 to estimate how much money you're going to need to save. The rule of 25 is it's pretty simple. Really, after you figure out your income, you basically deduct what kind of sources you'll have coming in, which might be Social Security, could be a pension, and then you'll end up with a number. So let's say that that number ends up being $40,000 that you're going to need to take from your nest egg. So if you multiply that by 25, you end up with $1 million. That's the answer. Now, why a million? Because if I take a safe 4% withdrawal out of $1 million, I end up with $40,000. So when you take how much you're going to need, you take out what you're going to have, you end up with this net number you need to take from investments, you multiply it by 25, boom, there you go. Now, that sounds pretty simple, but I would still seek out a little bit of professional advice to figure out what that number really is. And then the last thing is know your appropriate investment mix. You know, as you're younger, you can be more aggressive. As you get a little bit older, you probably can't take a big hit a year or two, 3 years out from retirement. Can you imagine the people, and I know some of you are listening, that had to extend your planned retirement for 5, 6, 7 years now after that 2008 crisis. Now, I know 2008 was one of those anomalies. It doesn't happen very often when everything goes down. And things did come back, but how did you know they were going to come back? I remember watching people on TV, very well-known people, saying, hey, in March of 2009, the market was at its low, and they're saying, listen, if you're in stocks, then they can go down more, and they can even go down today. We had one famous guy saying, if you need your money in the next 5 years, get it out of stock. So know your appropriate investment mix. Some people say use the rule of 100, which says 100 minus your age is how much you should have in stocks. I don't really know if that's a great analogy or a great way to look at it, but it's a start. But know your appropriate investment mix. Don't be too aggressive heading into the final stretch. I meet with a lot of people. Unfortunately, we've had a good market the last several years, right? So when I meet with them, they come in and they look at their 401ks, and you know, we're a year away from needing it. And maybe it's the first time I've ever met them. We open up their account, we look at it, and I say, gosh, you're 80% stock. You know, if you have a 20% correction, you're going to lose $150,000. Well, I've realized over the years that a person's risk tolerance on average is a full year's salary. If they look at that and think, I've lost a full year's salary, they can't take that risk. So you want to hone that in. You want to pull it in. You want to take a little less risk. You know, understand longevity. That's another big one. Those are the three key ones I mentioned, but this is another one. You have got to understand that we are living longer. From Transamerica, I found a really good piece that a healthy male, age 65, has a 50% chance of living beyond age 85, and they have a 25% chance of living past 92. Females, 88 and 94. But if you're a married couple, a healthy couple, age 65, there's a 25% chance. That's a pretty good chance of getting to age 97. One of you making it to 97 is probably going to be the female. That's usually the way it works out. So understand this. Understand this stuff to become retirement ready. It's a lot to think about, a lot to understand. Social Security, I mentioned that earlier. We're doing these programs for people to understand this better, to see what their options are. So if you'd like to come, we have another one next Thursday at 1:30 at the Monroe County Library. We're not going to feed you. We're not even going to give you anything to drink. There's a drinking fountain in the hallway. That's about it. We'll give you some great information. People today said, that is the neatest stuff I've ever heard. So we hope that you'd have the same experience if you came. But you have to understand the hundreds of different claiming strategies, how to maximize your benefits, how to coordinate this with your investments, your pensions, your debt. All of this goes into a coordination package, and that's what gets you really retirement ready. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I have questions of the week. Can't wait. I've got some really good ones here. I've got a lot regarding retirement accounts. I've got one about a son, an older son, that a mother is worried about leaving money to, and how she can kind of control how he might spend that money once she's gone. So some good stuff when we come back. Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Saturday mornings at 9, Thursday nights at 6, always on WGCLradio.com. Those are the ways to catch the big shows. If you missed any of this show today on retirement readiness, getting ready to get ready, please tune in Saturday mornings at 9 or on WGCLradio.com. Next week, attorney Andy Maller, divorce attorney Andy Maller, is going to be my guest. He's going to be talking about, unfortunately, divorce. More than 50% of divorces in America happen, and more than 50% of marriages end in divorce, and unfortunately, many of them happen when you've had 20 to 25 years of marriage under your belt. You know, a lot of this happens where you get married, you have kids, and your whole life for 20 years is raising kids, and it's all about the kids and not about each other. And then all of a sudden, the kids are gone, and you're staring at each other, and you're thinking, do I even like this person anymore? So unfortunately, you know, people got to work at this. I mean, but it happens. So Andy is going to come on and talk about, you know, some of the considerations you should be thinking about before you pull the plug on a long-term marriage. If you're remarrying later in life, some of the protections you should have in place as far as prenups go and things like that. It's going to be a good show. I have never done a show like this before, but I talked to Andy a few months ago and keyed him up, emailed him a few weeks ago to say, hey, are you ready? And he's going to be on next Thursday night. So we're looking forward to having Andy Maller on. I haven't really put the entire program together yet, but for the most part, we're going to be talking about, you know, just those issues that you need to deal with and think about as you go through a divorce or even before you get married, when it comes to, you know, some legal documents. So Andy will be my guest. Really looking forward to that. Let's talk a little bit about some questions of the week. I promise to get this back in the program on a regular basis. And listen, it's not because of lack of questions. I get questions every single day. But what happens is we'll answer them, whether they're in person on the phone or in a meeting or on email, but then you have to go write it down. And you're real busy throughout the day and you just forget. So we wrote them down. Here's some this week. We had a person that came in and said, you know, their son is 50, only child. He's single, has no kids, and at this point really doesn't believe that he will get married or have kids. But he's not very good with money. You know, he has a great job, makes great money, but she said that if he had a dollar in his pocket, he would spend two. She's in her 70s and has about $750,000 in retirement accounts and savings, and she doesn't plan to go anywhere anytime soon, but she is worried that when she passes away that he's going to get all the money and he's going to spend it all, and he won't have anything for himself when he gets older. Do you have any thoughts on this, or should I even worry about it? Well, if you're worried about it, then yes, you should worry about it, and I would do something about it. And maybe you should say, at my death, he gets $250,000 in cash, and the rest is spread out over time. You might consider a trust or a beneficiary form. Some companies will allow you to lay this out in a beneficiary form, that they get lifetime income, or they get a percent here and a percent there and a percent later. But write down your thinking when you do this, so they know this was an act of love and nothing more, because you were worried about them and you wanted them to be secure. Otherwise, they might have some thoughts like, well, why did mom do it this way? So if you don't want to communicate it while you're living, write it down. Have the person that you're working with, either your financial person or your attorney, deliver that letter to them so they know why you did it. And it was certainly not for any other reason than that you just cared about them and it was out of love. Now, here's another question. I'm turning 70 in May. I'm still working at IU and I plan to work for another few years. TIAA Cref sent me a letter talking about taking a required minimum distribution. But I thought I heard you say that I do not have to take one as long as I'm still working. Is that right? Well, here's the thing. If you have IRAs or other plans other than the IU plan, you will have to take a required minimum distribution from those plans, but not from the one you're actively participating in. Now, I know from experience that CREF kind of leaves it up to you to make the decision to take one or not. They take the hands-off approach on the still working exception. Don't know why, but that's what they do. So, but bottom line, No on the IU plan, you do not have to. Yes on all other plans. Now, here's something to keep your eye on. What if you work for other universities and you still have their plan on your CREF statement? That happens all the time. You'll see your CREF statement and maybe you worked for Ivy Tech, IU, some university in New York, whatever, and they're all listed there. The only one that you can avoid taking the minimum distribution on is the one through IU. Every single other plan must have a required minimum distribution taken out of. So hopefully that helped just a little bit. Another question came about, what is a qualified longevity contract? And is it true that by taking one of these, I can delay, or by buying one of these, I can delay taking my required minimum distribution? Well, first of all, let me give you a little bit of background. Back in 2010, I think it was, the U.S. Treasury Department requested ideas from the insurance industry on how to facilitate greater availability to lifetime income options in retirement plans and IRAs. So they all responded, and they urged the government to remove the required minimum distributions on something called a deferred income annuity. In general, the final regulations, they were adopted, the recommendations were adopted, and then they excluded these deferred income annuities from the account balance used for RMDs. Now, it took July 1st of 2014 before we had the birth of what they now call the QLAC. The Treasury Department issued their final regs there, and this is basically how it works. The amount used to buy a QLAC is the lesser of 25% of your retirement account balance or $125,000. The qualified lifetime annuity contract will be exempt from required minimum distributions. They have to start taking income by age 85. Some of them offer death benefits, spousal benefits, to and even non-spouse beneficiaries. But to date, QLACs have to be fixed annuities. Now, they're fairly new. I've not personally used them yet, but I'm sure I will at some point, and that's what a QLAC is. So I was surprised to get that question because not many people know about these. Not many advisors know about these, let alone the general public, but good for them for doing some research and finding a potential good planning opportunity. So if you wanted to delay some RMDs to later down the road, you can do it, but you just have to use a QLAC. Hope you've enjoyed the show today on retirement readiness. Don't forget, again, next Thursday, we have the Social Security program over at the Monroe County Library. It starts at 1:30. You can sign up by emailing us at cfci.us. Just contact us, say, I'd like to come. It's really, there's a lot of seats in there. We rarely fill it up, but we get close sometimes. And this week, we had a smaller group, which was great. So next week, let's blow the top off of it and have a bunch of you in there. So again, next Thursday at 1:30. Next week, Andy Maller's my guest. So I hope you enjoyed the show, everyone. I'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.